Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I know it sounds weird for people to where we get excited talking to these criminals, but that's how we learn the inner workings of these organizations.
And they love to talk about it if you're just willing to be interested and not interesting. That's the best piece of advice I ever got from a New Mexico State police officer about undercover. Guy was incredible. And I was new learning to do undercover. And he said, bro, if you can just shut your mouth and be interested and not interesting, they'll tell you everything. And it worked. Yeah, my old partner would tell me, he's from Tennessee in West Virginia. He said, I can't do his accent, but Dave, God gave you 2 ears for a reason. Shut your mouth. And I was like, oh, okay.
Hey guys, welcome back for part 2 of this week's episode with David Tyree, 25-year retired DEA agent. Stud of the world, master of financial investigations. We got us some topics yesterday's episode that I wasn't expecting to go to, but they were some of the most important things we talk about on here. And that's how we can help children, our thoughts on addiction, responsibility, permissiveness. Those that you listen to me all the time, you know, I talk about those topics over and over again because they just kind of tick me off. But there's nothing more important than talking about our children, you know. It's real corny to say this, but they are our future.
Whether we like it or not.
Absolutely. So, David, thank you very much for coming back for part 2, brother. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
So, what we're going to talk about, as we mentioned yesterday, David was stationed in Lisbon, Portugal for a little over 3 years, about 3.5 years. Is that mm-hmm. right?
Correct.
And he was part of an organization over there called the Maritime Analysis Operations Center, MIOC. I mentioned yesterday, Frank Francis was the director. I think Frank was with the National Crime Agency and possibly with the Serious Organized Crime Agency in the UK prior to his retirement and going to Portugal. Old friend of mine that we stayed in touch. It's just the degrees of separation. They used to say it was 6 degrees. I think it's now, what, 2?
Yeah.
It's amazing. But while you were there, you're talking about all these massive seizures, but there was a case that developed. I'm not sure what your participation is, but you're familiar with it, which led to the indictment and arrest of some folks from Guinea-Bissau, which is a country in Africa for you redneck hillbillies like me that didn't know where it is and had to look it up. I'm telling you, I'm just saving you some time. But let's talk about that case a little bit, because that was pretty interesting.
Sure. And ironically, I'm holding my Mayoc coin they gave me when I left. It's giant, but it sits on my desk. Yeah, pretty cool, right?
That would not fit in a coin rack.
No, it doesn't. That's why I have to keep it here on my desk. And I'll do a shameless plug for their incoming director, Jose Ferreira, who was the deputy director of the judicial police in Portugal and then served as deputy director of MAOC. He's now coming, I think, in September. Just a huge advocate for DEA and what we do around the world. The case you're mentioning out of Guinea-Bissau, again, one of many participants. There were some incredible leadership, Lou Millione and others from the bilateral investigative unit out of SOD were running that case. I was just the schlump in charge of coordinating with the Cape Verdeans and the Portuguese. And so in a nutshell, that investigation involved political leadership out of Guinea-Bissau, who was essentially trying to trade weapons to shoot down U.S. assets in Colombia in exchange for narcotics. So really fascinating case involving countries from all over the world that were having grave concerns over a nation state exchanging narcotics for weapons to shoot down U.S. assets in Colombia. That case took the hard work and dedication of so many different agencies, by the way, and things we don't think about at DEA, but you're talking about Treasury and the Office of Foreign Asset Control. You're talking about the Southern District of New York. And really, the heartbeat of that investigation was the 959 group, the bilateral investigation unit. And I was new to Portugal. They brought me in as one of their own. We were using the FAST team. We had tactical teams. We had other countries helping us just to secure the tactical equipment to do those at-sea arrests in international waters.
Okay. And if you would just tell everybody what 959 is and what FAST is.
Sure. So 959 is a statute that allows the U.S. to make charges in international arenas and bring folks back to the United States that are involved in criminal activity. And they may have never, ever set foot in the United States. It's almost a draconian statute, really, when you think about it. But boy, are they good. And they're all over the world operating with our foreign counterparts, just doing some great work. I have nothing but respect for those agents and the time and effort and energy. I mean, I spent 21 days with them in Sal, Cape Verde, Africa, for a three-day operation. So you can imagine just the way I smelled after 3 days of bringing close. But they just did such great work that from leadership down, and they were managing. I mean, they were really essentially going through the administrator to the President of the United States, giving briefings, and then bringing me on board. I'm, 35, 38 years old, briefing ambassadors, four ambassadors at one point, with their leadership. And again, back to DEA, Steve, and the fact that they even allowed me to go to those meetings as a guy who had transferred from Portland, Oregon, that to me is a sign of the leadership within DEA that sees, I don't even know if I brought any potential to the game, but they saw an opportunity and they said, well, Tyree's here. He's new. Let's make sure he's in these meetings. I had no business being there. And I think about Lou Millione and the other supervisors and the agents that all welcomed me in as a new guy. And that's that tribalism that motivated me and towards the end of my career got me to promote. I wanted to pay that back, at least model it back. Yeah. The FAST team, which I've heard rumors they might be coming back, is a team of agents that go through a rigorous screening process with peer review, by the way, of other agents. And through their, if they pass the rigorous training and peer review, they become these tactically minded agents that operate all over the world. I had the distinct honor of supervising three of them. In Wyoming and Fort Collins. And these guys are tip of the spear. Like, I couldn't sit where they sit. Now, I make fun of them a lot, by the way. A lot, Steve, because it's my insecurity comes out. So I tell them, oh, you guys are out doing these tactical cases. I was making real investigations. It doesn't ever go over well, right? And they'll refer to these scrolls that they have acquired over time. And they've got these really cool t-shirts from different police agencies. I mean, I am in awe of who they are and the sacrifices that they made, whether it was Guatemala or Afghanistan, working with law enforcement. I mean, for heaven's sakes, Pat McDarby, I think he's still on the job down, I believe, in Africa. These guys are just the most amazing, well-rounded, thoughtful, and the term I use is self-regulated. Mm-hmm. And I would tell you, and Steve, I hope you can agree that there are some in law enforcement. It is an arena where you can lose your cool and it's okay.
Right.
What I noticed from working with the FAST team domestically, right? FAST was disbanded and now they're domestic agents. Their ability to self-regulate under pressure was incredible to me. I tried to model my behaviors after them, failed miserably. But I'm sure they'll be listening. And as much as I tease them, oh my goodness, I got to tell you, Steve, we have a WhatsApp chat. And on that chat, I will come in as one of the FAST members because I wasn't cool enough to be on FAST. I wouldn't have made peer review. You can already tell. And I joke with them using scenes from the Avengers movies, basically. Hey guys, remember when we took out Thanos and I had to put on that Iron Man suit? And then the next guy, I'll come on as them saying, oh yeah. And then the kryptonite and so that's how I see them. They're superheroes. But they did the takedown in that case, actually, in international waters off Guinea-Bissau. They were the ones, the FAST team, that facilitated the arrests of several bad actors out of Guinea-Bissau.
Well, we've had Rob Zaharashevitz on the show before, who was heavily involved in 959, really, really close friend. And from FAST, we had Joe Piersanti.
Oh, he's incredible.
I was just emailing with him last week. For those of you that remember, Joe was shot in the head over in Afghanistan doing a FAST operation when he was laying down cover fire for his guys to get back to a helicopter. Took a 7.62 round to the head, survived. His guys came off the helo to get him off of one of the Chinooks, drug him back on there. Joe's a big boy. He's a bodybuilder, former Detroit cop. Went through all the rehab and everything, came back out, doesn't see, he's blind. But the administrators at the time found a position for him so that he continued to work as a special agent with the DEA. That's kind of the agency that takes care of his people, the leadership we talked about yesterday. And Joe's now retired, got a great life, doing things that he goes snow skiing. He goes hunting. He goes and shoots bow and arrows. He's blind. Tell me how you do that. But the man's doing it. And I think he recently got his lifetime membership to some world bodybuilding association. I mean, the guy's still kicking it out there. These are the studs that David's talking about that we get to work with at DEA.
And they're role models. And Joe, I know Joe knows it, but I don't know if he hears it enough. Many of us who I've never met Joe, my friends know him, but when you follow him and you think about on the hard days, and there are hard days. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can be great at work and horrible at home, great at work. They're tough days. And Joe and others like him have always been role models to the rest of us in law enforcement. And we're not there, right? We're not living with Joe and what he's going through on the day. I'm sure he's got bad days. But when you have that ability to associate with somebody like that, just through the recognition of the same agency, and I think DEA's full of people like that, it's such an honor. And that's probably why it's such a great honor to speak with you today. It's like, this is when my friends are like, hey, have you watched Narcos? I'm like, I watched it. I lived part of it. That's the kind of recognition that, I mean, I will take that with me. That's what you say. What do you want to be buried with? Just my memories of the time and the great people I worked with at DEA. And not everyone liked me. And I don't know if I liked everyone else, but at the end of the day, I knew they had my back. I knew if something went wrong, they were going to be at my front door. And that is a gift, man. And I can look back on it with such pride, admiration. So when you mention someone like Joe and the FAST team, or just that new agent that decided to sign up and take the job and put their lives at risk because there's a high demand for narcotics. It's a violent time, violent world. And say, not here. I'm going to take a stand. I think that is one of the bravest, boldest moves. I mean, I'm not a tattoo guy, but I did get a couple tattoos when I retired. I waited. And one in Latin says, fortune favors the brave, because I thought about how fortunate I was. And trust me, I am a coward, but I was brave enough to show up every day for work. And the other tattoo I just recently got says Memento Mori. And it sounds silly, whatever, but I need to be reminded that I'm mortal, right? I need to be reminded that this too shall pass, and to focus my energy and effort on what matters and do the hard stuff. And again, I think goes back to self-regulation. I think in law enforcement, it's so easy for us to let go of that. And it's a gift. And for our kids, right? It's caught, not taught. So we have to learn to do that. And I don't think I did it as well as so many I worked around, and they don't know it, but I certainly saw them as role models of like, wow, things are going to hell and they're holding it together. And all I want to do is scream. What do you mean we have to be out here another 24 hours? What do you mean there's no money? What do you mean the budget shut down? And I learned Joe was on that podcast with Jocko Willick. It's like, I started reading those books like, oh, resources. Good. We don't have enough resources. Good. We'll learn to do more with less. That's the Joe Piersanti FAST DEA mindset, that they're still showing up to work, doing their job, even today, right? This administration, things are changing, priorities are changing. And I watch them jest and get that front side aperture and say, you tell us what's next. Yes, we'll do it. And I have so much respect for that, because I watched others model how to navigate those often changing priorities.
And it seems like it changes every stinking day.
Right? Yeah. And we roll with it. We just roll with it. And I love that because we never pack our bags and leave. We say, okay, well, what is it we're doing now? Doctors? Fine. Bring it.
Let's go. Yeah. Now, you mentioned who were the targets of that case in Guinea-Bissau?
Well, it would have been the head of the Navy, a head of the Air Force, a Jose Bubu Ntutu. Jose, I'm trying to remember their names. Now. You're getting me off guard. But there was several of them that got arrested that played a role in that investigation. I think for the one that made it onto the OFAC list would have been Jose Bubu Ntutu, who was arrested and actually ended up pleading guilty in the Southern District of New York. And again,
he was a rear admiral of the Guinea-Bissau Navy, right?
Yep, he sure was. And what was so cool about this case, which is hard, you have to understand, when we're sitting in Cape Verde, totally different, it's not Guinea-Bissau, and working with the Cape Verdean police to actually get these guys in custody in international waters, bring them to an island and have the prime minister help DEA extradite these bad actors to the United States. It's not easy. In fact, it's for one of the most traumatic moments of my career was getting the FAST team luggage to the airport. So quick story, Steve. They're all on the boat coming in with the bad guys. We've got a private jet to get them extradited to the United States. I get the phone call. Hey, we don't have a lot of time. Can you just bring all the FAST team luggage from where we were, our safe house, to the airport? Yeah, no problem. So I think me and another agent are going through their luggage. This looks like a hand grenade. Are we allowed? This is probably going to beep at the airport. Different tactical tools that they had acquired to bring for the enforcement action. So when we ran that stuff, we didn't think we'd have to take it through the security line. The Cape Verdeans assured us we wouldn't. Of course, you get to the airport. Guess what? It's going to security. Steve, I was shaking like a dog crapping a peach seed as we were laying that luggage on me and another great agent. And it was hot, but we were sweating for different reasons. And thankfully, we'd removed all those. You're just never sure. And lo and behold, it was easy day. And, the prime minister came to the airport. We thought there'd be hearings. And he goes, nope, we're here to help the United States. Get these guys out of here. You got the prime minister of a country telling you that? That's the kind of respect that DEA's earned around the world. And it was through collaborative efforts. We had the Cape Verdean law enforcement, the MAOC, who had participated and told us about seizures related to Guinea-Bissau in advance. And they've done some since, by the way. It was a real collaborative effort. And I'm so proud of that case. It was written up in some books. And when I say I'm proud of the people I got to work around. I did very little other than take credit for all their great work.
And his role in this, he was. You tell us what his role. I read about it. I want you to.
No. I want to hear what you read. You go ahead. I want to hear what the books are saying.
Well, he was providing storage facilities in Guinea-Bissau for thousands of kilos of cocaine. His fee was going to be $1 million for every 1,000 kilos. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And again, if you look, we found out in post-arrest interviews, like the military in Guinea-Bissau doesn't have a retirement plan. So he was looking for ways to fund 70-year-olds carrying M16s. Like, how do you pay for these guys? What was so weird about that case, by the way, Steve, again, talking about financial cases, right? So the Guinea-Bissauans could go into Portugal. They would purchase a high-dollar vehicle, let's call it a Porsche. They would ship the vehicle down to Guinea-Bissau. Once it came and was arrived, they would take out a chip, load it with narcotics, wrap it up, and send it back to Portugal, calling the dealership saying, yeah, the car's not working. They weren't even paying the shipment costs. They would receive it in Portugal, offload the cocaine, bring it to the dealership. Obviously, the dealership's like, oh, this chip got somehow is loose. Click. They would return the vehicle, fill it with euros from the sale of narcotics, and send it back down to Guinea-Bissau.
Wow.
So talk about financial cases. And the judicial police in Portugal put all of this together and did such great, and they gave us all of the records. We were able to make a really interesting and significant impact in drug money laundering in Europe with some other really great DEA leadership in the European region. I think Dan Saavedra specifically by name, he was able to tie this to transnational organized crime, terrorist groups. And again, as a narc from Portland, Oregon, going into this environment where the Maritime Analysis Operations Center is showing us these patterns of movement where you think, wait, what's happening here? Oh, this is being used. These narcotics are being used and sold to fund transnational organized crime for ideologies that want to do harm to the United States or just free-thinking individuals. And when I never looked back. We were working cases to the point when I retired in April of 2023. My office in Wyoming, working with the great state highway patrol, Wyoming Division of Criminal Investigation, we brought everybody to Canada to meet with law enforcement from Canada based on an interdiction of 600 pounds of meth in Wyoming. Collaborative effort. Everyone's working together. Guess who arrests the load coordinator who's responsible for importing? I think we seized 89 guns destined for Canada. The Portuguese. Wow. This clown got arrested flying from Canada to Portugal. Portugal had $1.5 million on him at the time of arrest. And the agents in Wyoming were able to collaborate with the DEA in Portugal with a couple phone calls. And the Portuguese police arrested him on a warrant from the Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs section. That's that international impact that DEA established years ago when you were on the job. And we've worked to maintain today. I have friends that are still on the job that are going overseas, and they're all building on that relationship that mm-hmm. guys like you made for us in South America. I mean, we didn't have those relationships. Forget it. Forget it.
It's, and you know, I mean, so our listeners may not know this. Some of them might, but I know you know it and I know it. The last administration had a research project done to see, is it beneficial for DEA to have all these overseas offices? What that last administration didn't understand, in my opinion, is that's DEA's bread and butter. We not only address the issue here in the United States, we address it at the source, and that results in international cooperation amongst law enforcement agencies like you're talking about. And you know as well as I do, if you know somebody personally and you call them, whether they're in the United States or another country, say, hey, I need a favor. If you've got that connection, that network already built, yeah, what can I do for you? It doesn't go on the bottom of the pile. It goes on top of the pile and things get done. Oh, so it just kind of boggled my mind to hear that they were doing that study. And I understand they're probably going to close some of the smaller offices, maybe some of the less active offices around the world that DEA has, but we need to maintain that international presence. Javier and I just spoke earlier this week, and we're recording this in mid-August. We got to speak to the National Academy, which is sponsored by the Federal Bureau of Investigation at their academy. These were 265 executive-level law enforcement leaders, not only from the United States, but I think 22 countries were represented there. It's the best program, the best idea that the Bureau has ever produced, in my opinion, because we had another guest on here, Dale Watson, who used to be in charge of counterterrorism for the FBI back during the coal bombing, the Marine Corps barracks bombings, Oklahoma City, all those different things. And he says when something happens around the world, the first thing they go to is their National Academy director. Who do we know in Guinea-Bissau? Who do we know in Cape Verde? Who do we know in Russia? It's phenomenal, but it all comes from that networking. I got to support DEA on that. That's a fantastic idea, having that international cooperation.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think in 2 weeks, I'll be speaking at the 42nd Symposium on Cross-Border Crime in Cambridge, United Kingdom. It's because of DEA and some relationships that I get to represent this company I work for, Validate, to discuss asset forfeiture, money laundering at a conference I probably have no business being at. But at the same time, to your point, my children, both two of my children, traveled to Europe post university. And I had the deputy director of the judicial police meeting my kids at the airport. Yeah. Right? And I didn't ask for that. I just sent an email saying, hey, my daughter's going to be over in Madrid. Can you help out if she has any problems? Well, this gentleman I worked with at the Maritime Analysis Operations Center is now a commissioner. He's like, oh, we'll get her at the airport. As a father, do you know how happy I was and how proud yes, I was of a relationship from 2015? And thankfully, DEA is still over there maintaining those relationships. So I couldn't agree with you more. I've got a friend that's going to go over to our office in Rome. And we just were speaking over the weekend about all the other crime that's happening. It's not when I was with DEA over there, it was only myself and the country attaché in Portugal. If there was any law enforcement issue, we were read in, and the ambassador expected us to know, collaborate with FBI, who was in Spain, in Madrid. Mm-hmm. And customs was also in Portugal. What a great opportunity to build these networks, which I say the word exploit, I rely on heavily to this day. Not even to mention, by the way, the ambassadors, State Department. My buddy, who was the assistant regional security officer in Portugal, is now running diplomatic security for the 2026 Olympics in Milan. And I have a place to stay and tickets to the Olympics because I treated him with dignity and respect, right? I'm always trying to exploit something out of people.
Perks of the job after you retire.
But it's that relationship, right? And when I'm sure, Steve, you have it all the time. You run into one person where you are in Florida, who had a negative relationship with DEA, and now they don't. I don't know if they understand. Like, you're representing the entire agency, right? So you got to remember that when you walk in the room. I had a supervisor tell me this. I was new. I didn't know what I was doing, and he said, "Listen, man, you've got to go in there and be the tip of the spear." And I said, "I don't know what I'm doing." He goes, "Yeah, fake it." And here I am 25 years later, but you know, it empowered me. He didn't say go in and be a jerk, but just go in and lead. And sometimes leadership is just, sometimes honestly, it's bringing coffee to the briefing. That's leadership, right? Taking care of your people.
Yeah, exactly. And it can be that simple, just that simple act of taking the time to get everybody a cup of coffee. As ridiculous as that sounds, the respect that you gain just by doing a simple act like that is phenomenal. And that shows leadership. You're absolutely right. I agree with you 100%. Without giving up means and methods, why did those people have to be, why did that admiral have to be arrested in international waters? I know why, but.
I mean, I think for the U.S. government to operate in a foreign entity and make an arrest is illegal as it probably gets. So we had to draw these folks out into international waters where we can actually effect those arrests. And that was it took a lot of work from the undercovers in that case to convince these guys to come out 14 miles into the ocean. But they believed, as I recall, they believed they were going to receive quite a bit of money during that meeting. And unfortunately, what they did receive was the working side of the FAST team firearms. And then they had to be ferried back, really, in international waters all the way to Cape Verde. And the jokes you talk about, the agents throwing up in international waters because they were seasick. Boy, we did not give them any break when they made it to land. We made sure and got every bit of food from the restaurants. You know, we knew they were not going to want to eat. We're like, have you tried, octopus tentacles? That's the sense of humor we brought to that operation. But yeah, hats off to the teams.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
That admiral, and I did a little more reading on him just to see what happened. He cooperated. He was sentenced, I think, to 4 years. Went back to Guinea-Bissau, went to the existing president, said, "Hey, can I have my job back?" Apparently, they didn't give it to him. So there was a coup attempt, and he was part of that coup.
Yeah.
I mean, this is third world, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we could have a whole podcast about Africa, but I learned a ton. I really learned a lot from working with the Cape Verdeans and the cops in Senegal, the country attachés I worked with and the other agencies. I learned so much. And yeah, my office has got a lot of little knickknacks and whatnot, the things I collected. We got to do the inspection in Egypt. Myself and a recently retired Mike Maxwell, and just had the time of our lives being in a country that was going through all kinds of chaos. I mean, we had guns pointed at us walking to a restaurant, just wrong place, wrong time, talked to the wrong person, military came out pointing. And Mike is from Atlanta, and he's trying to explain to these gentlemen yelling at us in Arabic that we're just trying to find a place to eat.
And I'm like,
yeah, I said, "Mike, I don't know if this is international. We just need to keep going." And Mike and I had this the time of our lives over there. And again, we're doing an inspection, right? So we're inspecting the office and the embassy, and the respect and regard that every other agency had for DEA. Like, you have to write that up. And I got to do it in Copenhagen as well. Same messaging, like, "Hey, DEA is here. Hats off." I mean, they ran the Maltz challenge when we were there. So here I'm doing the Maltz challenge with, like, I don't know, 30 other foreigners doing the Maltz challenge. And that was the day, I think I told you in the email, Narcos had come out and they had a Narcos party. So here I am, it's like 10 in the morning. These guys are cracking open beers to watch Narcos. And I'm like, I know of Steve Murphy. But instant tribal communication, because we were all cops or military. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to. I want to mention this now because I don't want to forget. We had mentioned yesterday about Rafael Caro Quintero and your involvement in a financial case. So let's talk about that just a little bit. How did that get started? What were the results?
Okay. Well, and I got to brief this to the administrator, so I'm very proud of this investigation. But I'll start at the beginning. We did not know the money was tied to Rafael Caro Quintero until post seizure, where we were doing interviews. So what happened was, we're in Wyoming. We observed a vehicle purchase that the purchaser did not have the requisite income to purchase the vehicle herself. So she brought in her relative and walked out with like a $70,000 truck. And it paid, I think, $11,000 cash. Through indices checks, we have access to different databases. We saw that this individual had an independently owned fast food Mexican restaurant in Wyoming. 50,000 people, by the way, is the population in Cheyenne. And every day she was depositing $9,900, $9,900 every day for over a year. Well, especially when these are $5 burritos. So we started to investigate, and what we saw was the checks she would put in the cash and then the next day remit a check to an unlicensed, unregistered wholesale food distributor out of Colorado Springs. When we ran the owner of this unregistered, unlicensed wholesale food distributor, they had been reported to DEA from a source back in 2011 as a drug trafficker, money launderer with access to a trucking company. So, really long story short, we started working with some banks, financial institutions, and collaborating with them on our investigation, and ultimately identified 26 different restaurants, 66 different bank accounts that were used in an international money laundering operation. And what was happening was, the owner of the wholesale food distributor, who happens to be related to Rafael Caro Quintero through marriage, was recruiting folks to open these restaurants, providing them, by the way, materials to run the restaurant in exchange for access to their bank accounts. So imagine on the I-25 corridor from Colorado Springs up into Wyoming, 26 different restaurants, money being deposited all over the country from narcotic sales into these restaurant accounts, who would then remit checks to the wholesale food distributor, avoid all the taxes, right? Because it's cost of goods sold. I learned that from IRS. And this individual that was running the wholesale food company would then go to two specific companies in California and buy one very specific beef supplied by Chapo Guzman's nephews to unwitting wholesale food distributors, which, by the way, I knew nothing about any of this. How did I learn this? Through talking to people, talking to folks in the industry. I did not know that the beef industry with Mexico is a zero-sum game. We found out working with our counterparts in Mexico that these bad actors were claiming a 17% VAT by exporting this specific beef. So the money laundering operation, again, when you have your wholesale food distributor buying this beef, landing it at these restaurants, saying, look, you don't got to pay me for materials. I just need access to your bank accounts. He would then bring the money to this wholesale food distributor who was really an unwitting. They didn't know where the beef was coming from. How could they? Mm-hmm. And then they're wiring the money back into Mexico. So the cartel says, this isn't drug money. It's from our beef exportation. So we got to work with the Mexican authorities. And ultimately, we see 66 bank accounts. We missed a lot of money, I'm not going to lie. But we walked away with $1.8 million. And in that event, many came forward, which was fascinating to tell us about the organization and how they were all scared to death, which is part of dealing with cartels, which you know far better than I do. But when they tied it to Rafael Caro Quintero, it was only – we had someone call – I mean, again, I'm in Wyoming, a high-level trafficker from Chicago who was part of a different organization called, actually met with us to explain the larger organization, how the money was tied to RCQ. And again, I'm very proud of that case. We shared back, I believe, over $1 million with the Cheyenne Police Department because of the asset forfeiture agreement. We had claimants come forward, I think 26 claimants, and we won. We never had to go to court on any of them, and we were able to seize and forfeit the money. So I think I probably missed $70 million. I told you the truth. But the banks were so helpful in that investigation, the financial investigative units working with us to make sense of the money movement and then articulate it to the judges in Wyoming. So probably one of the cases I'm most proud of, especially because I had so much help from the folks at DEA, the folks from the El Paso Intelligence Center, SOD, Special Operations Division. Like, I had so many folks helping bring that case over the line. I think my partner and I started it in July of 16, and we effected the seizure warrants in July of 18. And the money, I retired in April of 2023, and it was still, we were still waiting for it to be shared back to the state and locals. It had been forfeit. But that's, that's the kind of impact I felt in a state like Wyoming. That's the least populated state in the country. It was really cool to be able to show our state and local counterparts, like, look, even your state is being exploited by drug cartels. So, and they knew it, but it was nice to show them through the money. And we actually had the administrator fly out. We had the attorney general fly out, and my special agent in charge let me brief them on the investigation. And again, highlight for me in my career.
Wow. Wow. And it just shows you that it's everywhere. It's permeated every little community in our country.
Yes. Unfortunately, for now.
Unbelievable. You, and one question for you, the person who came out to educate you a little bit, that wasn't one of the Flores brothers, was it?
No.
Chicago?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
Or if it was, I wouldn't say it, but it wasn't. No. That was a scary meeting, by the way. That's a scary phone call to get, you know, and I'm sure you've had them where they're like, hey, I have some information for you. Okay. Yeah, I'll meet you at the international section at the Denver International Airport. Huh? Okay. like, and you go, and that's again, you imagine my ASAC at the time, assistant special agent in charge, we had one rule, no blindsides, right? Yeah. I can give him bad news. I can give him good news, just no blindsides. So he said, hey boss, you got time for a call? Yeah. I said, you're not going to believe this. And of course he was tactical, like, we need a security team. I'm like, well, look, guy's coming in. Well, you don't have any charges on this guy. He wants to talk. And it was so fun. So fun.
Yeah.
And some of the, yeah.
Yeah. I know it sounds weird for people to where we get excited talking to these criminals, but that's how we learn the inner workings of these organizations.
And they love to talk about it. If you're just willing to be interested and not interesting, that's the best piece of advice I ever got from a New Mexico State police officer about undercover. Guy was incredible. And I was new learning to do undercover. And I talk a lot. You can tell. It's how I get out the nerves. And he said, bro, if you can just shut your mouth and be interested and not interesting, they'll tell you everything.
That's it.
And it worked.
I've got a little plaque on the bookshelf back here behind me that came from Entrepreneurs Organization in Washington, D.C. It says, to be a good leader, you have to be a good listener. A lot of smart, intelligent things right there in that one little quote.
Sure.
Quote.
Yeah, my old partner would tell me, he's from Tennessee in West Virginia. He said, I can't do his accent. But Dave, God gave you two ears for a reason. Shut your mouth. And I say, oh, okay.
I grew up I was born in Tennessee and I went to high school and college in West Virginia.
Oh, but it was Jay Perry, recently retired. He led DEA in domestic seizures doing interdiction cases in New Mexico.
Wow. Yeah. I don't think I ever heard of
him. Oh, he's one of the best. They don't come any better than Jay. They broke the mold.
I have to get him on the show because we would understand each other's accents.
Oh, again, I often, with the Academy, we would tease him so much. We needed I'd say, man, I need an interpreter or a dialect coach. And Jay could talk his way into anyone's luggage doing interdiction. And he teaches once in a while with some other great interdiction officers. And I just, yeah, I worship the ground he walks on because he's got more cool seizure stories than anyone I know.
Well, that's part of the West Virginia Mafia. I don't know if you even know that, but that DEA has a new chief of ops, Matt Allen.
That's right. Yeah, I believe I went to school with Matt. I know. So good. Well, we can count on the fact there won't be that everything will be easy to understand for us Northerners.
The Hillbilly Mafia.
That's so funny.
While you were in Wyoming, you actually got promoted, right?
I did. Resident agent in charge for the last 5 years of my career. And they gave me, when I retired, this cool flag. One of the task force officers' wives makes these really beautiful flags. Yeah, and it's signed by everybody on the back.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Now, in April of 23, you decided to pull the pin. Why?
I had been doing financial cases, working with different financial investigative units for a long time. As RAC, my leadership let me make cases. So I was still out working with state and locals. What we would do is get like the bank card of the courier on an interdiction, and the team in my office, we'd run that out to do pattern of life and seize assets if we could. And one of the financial institutions I worked with reached out and said, we would like you to come in and audit our financial crimes program for a bank. And I thought I knew nothing about banking. I thought I knew something. So I went over to this institution and for 14 months had the distinct honor of working with their internal audit team and their financial crimes team going through their financial crimes programs, which was fascinating to me. I learned so much. And I train cops like, hey, here's what I'd ask for. If I served a subpoena to a bank now, here's what I'd ask for. And I give that out. Anyone wants that, I have a PDF I send you. Here's all the things I'd ask for. Same with peer-to-peer money movement. They have law enforcement access to all the big peer-to-peer money movement applications. So I try and get that out to cops all the time saying, listen, money movement is changing and you don't need to be intimidated by it. I'll give you everything I have on crypto, what to look for, who to talk to trace it. But cash is still king. And working at the bank for 14 months like that, I saw so many reports filed where it was still cash. The one thing I'll tell you, Steve, is these bank analysts, they're not read in on typologies related to money movement, as whether it's drug trafficking, human trafficking, they're really good at fraud. But my role that I took on was to educate the banks on, hey, here's the different typologies you want to be looking for when you're seeing money movement that looks suspicious. And that graduated into where I am at now, with this company called Validate Financial. They have a software platform that takes bank records and quickly makes a storyboard of money movement. It's fascinating. We were just presenting it to FLETC yesterday, the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. It's a fascinating program. They found over $1 million on a case that we did here in Northern Colorado. And I chased them down saying, look, I just got to get this into the hands of law enforcement, because it's nerdy work, you know, going through bank records, and it takes a long time. And I think this is a great tool that law enforcement should be able to access to make sense of money movement. Because my argument, like we said earlier, is we got to put them in jail. We got to take their dope. We got to take their stuff. Right. You and I did how many years for retirement? 20, I mean, and this is my joke when I teach law enforcement, like, it's cops and inmates that measure their time, like the how long you've been in. Right? So isn't it weird? So we got to take their stuff, because I want them to be sitting in prison going, not only do I have to do jail time, when I get out, I don't have my $200,000 or my millions of dollars to go back to. The government took it.
That's a very good point. I never looked at it like that.
Creepy, right?
Yeah. It is. It's very creepy. So I just want to mention to our listeners here, you've seen David here yesterday and today. He's very much into self-deprecation here. He's being humble. You know, he's making sure that the world knows that what we do is a team effort. He's very good at doing that. That this is not a one-man show. There's a lot of we do have some agents that think the world revolves around them, and every law enforcement agency in the world has those people. You just try to keep them from getting killed, to be quite honest with you. But here's a guy who just was given a challenge at the beginning of his career by his boss, who said, I want you to learn about financial investigations, gave him the appropriate training so he would know how to do that. We joked around about learning how to balance a checkbook. You're going to have to go do that on your own.
Yeah, sorry.
There's programs out there that will do it for you. But it's just amazing where your life has taken you. You know, you took advantage of going to the overseas arena by living in Portugal, and you still stay in touch with those folks over there. You make lifelong friends in this job. It's the way it is. You mentioned that you're heading over to Cambridge, UK here for some speaking events. I know you told me you got some other – you're doing a lot of Department of Defense and law enforcement training opportunities, all financial-based, right?
Yeah, counter-threat finance. Based trainings through either the Association of Certified Anti-Money Laundering Specialists, through my company. I get asked to do a lot of stuff. The American Banking Association. And these are all people with the same mindset of taking out the economic incentive to commit crime. And my role is to try and educate and equip. And like you, Steve, like I want them to read the books. I want them to understand it. I want them to have a really good, solid working knowledge. I'll send them go-bys for affidavits. I still have them. And I look at this as an opportunity. I see it as giving back. And probably much like you, Steve, there's many days where I miss – we talked about this the other day. They told me at the academy, the DEA is a jealous mistress. My wife does not find that funny anytime I bring it up. Because my other mistresses are not very jealous, apparently. But it is, it's so, and I'm embarrassed to say it, but it's just the two of us. When I get these texts from folks at DEA, hey, can you help us out on this case? Hey, we've got some, we'd like it. I'm 30 feet tall in that moment. I feel so good about the experience, and I'm so grateful for the leadership. And it's not, they didn't do it right all the time, but they saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And when I applied, you know, when I remember taking the polygraph, and I won't say the guy's name, but he goes, I don't think you have what it takes to knock down doors. And that stung. That hurt, because I was like, yes, I do. Let me show you. And I think I spent a lot of my effort and energy trying to prove him wrong. And I look back now, and I'm just, when you're in it, And to the agents that are listening and anybody in law enforcement listening, it's tough, man. You are on the bumpy road. When you get out, you will go through the five stages of grief. You will miss it. You will be like, I'm just John Q. Citizen, right? I'm a nobody. But my affiliation to this agency and to law enforcement guides and directs almost every decision I make almost every day. And we're still allowed to carry our badge. I have retired creds. I get to carry my gun because I left in good standing. And I carry those things with pride. I hope to God I'm never in a critical incident, but I also hope to God that if and when the time comes, I will rely on training. I will rely on the relationships. I'll rely on the good work and the characters I saw from those guys from DEA, the fast state and local city guys, did the job overseas because they cared about their communities. And if that sounds cheesy to you or anyone else, I'm sorry. Only so much that you're dead inside. Because to me, what's our legacy? Living in Europe, in Portugal, seeing these castles from 1,000 years ago, that's a legacy. Yep. And you said it earlier, right? It's for the kids. I would like my legacy to be to my kids and to my community. They were brave in the face of danger. They stood up for what they believed was right. They didn't do it at the expense of anyone else's rights or their feelings, but they stood up for what was right. And we have to agree on certain things, like our community should feel safe. I don't care where you fall on the spectrum politically, you should feel safe going to the grocery store, period. We have to, as law enforcement or retired law enforcement, contribute to that dialogue through accountability, transparency, and a continued desire to serve the communities that we're a part of. That's why I know you did it and you saw the belly of the beast. It's why I know I did it. And the further I get away from the job, the more proud I am of the ability to maintain that. I mean, it's a war. You're at war for 25 years. And I look back on my buddies that are still doing it with nothing but love, respect, gratitude. And if I wasn't so cheap, I would thank them with actual gifts, but I'll just give them, you know, talk is cheap. I'll give them that, but I nothing but respect.
You know, there's a cheesy saying that I like to say that I coined. I don't know if I did or not. I don't remember hearing it from anybody, but just because we retire does not mean that our oaths ever expired.
I love it.
And you're espousing that. And you're actually getting ahead of me here, because the last question I was going to ask you is if you have any words of wisdom. And I can't think of anything better than what you just said right there. You know, we're setting an example for our families. We're setting an example for young people. We want to focus on bringing our children up right, because they are going to lead our country at some point. You talked about all these things that you're willing to share. I know that I found you on LinkedIn at David Tyree, and that's T-Y-R-E-E. I didn't find you anywhere else. Is there someplace else that people could find you, or how would you like people to get in touch with you?
Yeah, send me an email. It's my name with a David A. Tyree, T-Y-R-E-E, at gmail.com. Specifically, if you're looking for training PDFs, I send it out for free. It's used all the time. I was teaching it for DEA. I teach it for ACAMS. I go down with some great folks from the ACAMS, a retired colonel from the U.S. military. We teach together for ACAMS. Good stuff. And LinkedIn's fine. I wanted to finish, or at least some words of wisdom that I've learned and applied, and I learned it from the Portuguese and my good friend Jose Ferreira, who's going to be reaching out to you now as the MAOC director. When I went over there, they have a proverb, and in Portuguese, it's Tudo vale a pena se na alma não é pequena, which is all the Portuguese I speak. No, and what that means is everything is worth it if your soul is not small. And I love the fact that the Portuguese measure their life through not their emotions, but the experience of your soul. And it's all worth it if your soul isn't small. So that's what we get to control, right? We get to control, as a leader in my current company taught me, there's the event, the response, and your reaction. And all we get to control is not what happens or the event, but it's our reaction. And as professionals in law enforcement, I love what you said about being retired. I never gave up the oath. We're still held to that standard. Although, and I probably press into that too hard because I think about it almost every day. I think about when I'm at the grocery store, when I'm driving. You don't want to hear what I say, but I do think like, wow, I represented our government for 25. I had the strength of the federal government. And to your credit, Steve, the reason we all do what we do is I think the bad guys are still scared of us from what you all did back in the narcos days. I mean, you guys set the stage and we get to live in that. And my family's safe because of it. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't feel threatened all the time as a former DEA agent because I think the bad guys know what'll happen.
Well, thank you for saying that. I'm not sending you any money. Just like you said.
That talk's cheap. If you just get me on like nine different Netflix shows, that would be perfect.
Yeah, I'll work on that.
Thank you. I'll start cutting carbs.
But it's been a true honor to have you on here, David. Thank you so much for reaching out to start with, for initiating this conversation. Wasn't real sure where this was going to go, but I know I was very interested in your financial background. But I feel like we've had some conversations yesterday and today that needed to be discussed here on the show that I think most law enforcement and military first responders in our country agree with. I think that most moms and dads out there that are trying to raise their children right and taking responsibility are being responsible as parents to teach their children. I think they would agree with what we've discussed here as well. So it's been a true honor to have you on here. If there's anything that I can ever do for you, you know how to contact me now. All you got to do is ask the investigators that are out there. You heard he's offering resources that come from 25 years of experience for free. There's not a lot of adequate financial investigators in the law enforcement realm. So reach out to David. He told you through LinkedIn. He gave you his email address, which I don't think I'm in my fifth year doing this show. I don't think anybody's ever given their email address out here on the show except me. So that's significant.
My other one is puppykiller79@AOL.net, but no one seems to want to email me there. Just kidding.
I don't think I would either.
No, I was gonna tell you, I said for free, right? And I always say this joke. I say, you know, my mother-in-law tells me all the time, some people charge to be good. David, you're good for nothing. So I take it to heart.
I like your mother-in-law.
She sees all it. Right. She calls it like she sees it.
Yeah. Really. So once again, had another stud on here, another hero who has dedicated his life to supporting his fellow man and his country, standing up for his country. True honor to have you on here, David. So everybody, thank you so much for continuing to come back here to listen to the Game of Crimes, Murph in the Morning. Next week's guests are going to be impressive as well. It's going to be a little different next week's episode, but you might want to come in. If you need a good laugh, this is going to be the guy you want to listen to. I'm not going to tell you his name now, but I will tell you he's an attorney. Oof. And you know what my thoughts are about attorneys, but he's a good attorney. So thank you again for coming around. God bless. I don't understand why you folks continue to come back, but the truth is I really do know why you come back. You enjoy playing the biggest, the baddest, the most dangerous game of all, and that's the game of crimes. God bless. See you next week.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I bring break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.